Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. One more segment of the Think Tank. We have Jeffrey Boyd, alderman from the 22nd District in the city of St. Louis, Chris the Mumbler Arps, and Amy Mark Scores. So, Jeffrey, I understand this is where you live and what you do, so however candid you can or can't be, I respect that. But we got to talk about Kim Gardner, what's going on. Chris, you said it was a nice dovetail from what Amy said. Why don't you lead it
up? Yeah, when we were talking about just the crime and everything in St. Louis, I think what we're seeing now, when you have what it seems like the circuit attorney is against the chief of police and they're battling, and then what was extraordinary to me the other day when circuit attorney Gardner's lawsuit was filed is you have the city of St. Louis putting out a press release distancing themselves from her, calling her lawsuit lies. I think you're going to have this crime problem when the people that are committing the crime see a divide between the police and the circuit attorney, and the circuit attorney seems to side with the criminals instead of with the loyal citizens. I think you're going to have crime more and more out of control. They see what's going on. They see that they're arguing between each other. They see that this no bail movement. They see Kim Gardner trying to get somebody out of jail that she says didn't commit murder. I think when you look like you're on the side of the criminals take that as free rein to do what they're doing.
Chris, certainly I can understand your perception because all of this is about perception, right? I think if we look at this from a macro issue, you have African Americans for the very first time in prosecutorial positions across the country. And most of them are coming under fire because they're coming with policies and practices that are different from the norm. Right. So you have Kim Gardner when it seems like, and I'm not a spokesperson for Kim Gardner, but I am a practical person that's for fairness. Wait a minute.
Her conviction. She has the lowest conviction rate of any circuit attorney in recorded memory.
And
her policies are failures.
And that's based on
failing.
And that's based on what report?
You look in the Post-Dispatch. They looked at her conviction rate. Her conviction rate's like 7%.
I haven't seen that data, but here's what I want to say to you from the perspective of a lot of people that I communicate with. Jennifer Joyce had never been under the type of scrutiny that Kim Gardner have been under. People left Jennifer Joyce's office. It wasn't an anomaly, right? Witnesses wouldn't testify. People had to be let out of jail, charges dismissed. That's not an anomaly. But it seems like since Kim Gardner has been in office that we hear so much drama about what's going on in that office to the point where I don't think anybody think anything is good happening. I would think that there's some good and positive things that's happening in that office. But again, I'm not a defender of Kim Gardner. But let's go to Wesley Bell. Wesley Bell has been accused of so much stuff that happened when Bob McCullough was in office. Take the ridiculous deal about the car. They made a really big deal about a freaking car. Bob McCullough had new cars when he was in office. This is a conspiracy in my mind against African-American prosecutors across the country. Just look at the data.
Weren't you guys making a big deal about cars in the city when all the city, the treasurer and all these people and Darlene Green had cars and you guys were having a conniption fit over that?
No, we were not. Elliot Davis might have been having a conniption fit, but we were not having a fit about it. I think, first of all, public officials don't make a whole lot of money. And some of them need a car to do their business. Now, if you're certain administrative offices, county office holders, maybe you don't.
The treasurer makes $100,000 a year. She needs a car.
I'm not going to advocate for that.
Okay.
Okay. Right. But at the end of the day, if that was a precedence that had been set for years and decades, why make a big deal about it now? Right?
Can it not be true that Kim Gardner does face a higher level of scrutiny than someone else would, maybe, for a white male would, but at the same time, she could also be really bad at her job,
like Trump.
And the two, then you have this collision of extra scrutiny and a, I don't want to be too strong, but really incompetent circuit attorney. And then that's what happens is now you play whatever card or you see it right through the lens that you want to see. It's hard to be objective when those two things collide.
Right. And I like to speak to issues when I have data. Okay.
I think the data's out there, though, with the numbers, because like Vox was able, even Vox like put out the numbers.
And Jeffrey, here's data. The circuit attorney brought a case against the sitting governor with no evidence. I mean, that screams incompetence.
I'm not going to speak to whether that makes a person incompetent. I probably wouldn't have done it if I was a circuit attorney. I would have not touched that hot potato politically. Just
but you don't think that's politics. You don't think that's incompetent.
I think that started, you know, this whole thing, let's go get Kim.
Yeah.
But what's more important now, like right now, when kids are dying in the street, right, and you have a guy confessing to killing a kid, mm-hmm, and the circuit attorney says, oh, we don't have enough evidence. You have a guy getting in a fight at Ballpark Village, leaving Ballpark Village, getting his gun, going back to Ballpark Village, killing somebody, and then you have the circuit attorney saying, we'll give you 4 years. Oh, you've already served two? You get 2 years. That's bad. And what's more important at this point is saying, well, I think Kim Gardner is facing extra scrutiny, or, hey, people are dying in our city. The community is, I don't know why they would have any incentive to help the police out if they say, like, man, if I snitch on somebody, that guy's not going to prison. That guy knows who I am, and it's probably not going to be any benefit to me or the community. So at some point, yes, we can say, hey, I'm sorry you're facing this much more scrutiny, but let's look at the numbers. Let's look at the job being done. This is bad. This is hurting our city.
I saw the saddest thing in the world a couple weeks ago, or last week, when there was that shooting down at Lane Austin Funeral Home, and they said there were 50 bullets were shot during that. I think
the other day?
Yeah, where the young...
That was outside Serenity on Union.
Yeah, and the saddest thing that I witnessed is they were interviewing one of the residents, older lady that lived there, and she was just saying, "Just it's just really bad down here. We need help. It's just bad. Guns are everywhere." And it's just sad that those folks are down there in that situation, and no one, it seems like they are forgotten about, while the city politicians, and I'm not including you in that, but the politicians are fighting, rank going back and forth, but the people in that live down there and have to deal with that are left behind and have to live in war-torn conditions practically. It was just sad watching her say that.
I'll bring up the elephant in the room. Jeffrey, do you understand? I understand what you're saying about, hey, isn't it kind of weird coincidence that we have more African-American prosecutors nationally and they're coming under all this fire that their white predecessors didn't? Don't you also understand that looking at it from the outside, or looking at it as a white person, mm-hmm, that it certainly seems oddly convenient that we have these African-American prosecutors like Gardner. I won't talk about Wesley Bell much because I don't know much. But Fox in Chicago and the woman in Baltimore that seem to be at least a credible case against them for being very bad at their job, too fraudulent. I mean, Gardner's under investigation for some very bad things. That when the race card gets played, it hits me as, well, that's very convenient that it's always because you're black. Not it's always because you're black, all black people. But in these cases, it just seems to me to be a shield that I wouldn't have, that if I were doing a bad job, I'm an attorney. If I were doing a bad job as a circuit attorney, I would have no shield. It would be right. Either Dave Glover's a good attorney or a bad attorney.
Yeah. What matrix are we using, though? How we're evaluating whether somebody is competent or they're a good...
Well, the 7%, I can tell you. It usually runs about 95%.
And 110% turnover rate in her office is really high.
I'm stunned about the 7%. I haven't seen that information, but that doesn't sound good.
Yeah,
but again,
I know. I never did criminal law, but I lived with a public defender for years, and he would bitch and say, like, these prosecutors, they only cherry pick the good cases because they will not lose because they all want to be congressmen and senators. And that's the classic, is that a lot of them have 98-100%.
Well, it's disheartening that the police department murder rate, solving murders, is less than 50%. I mean,
you know why that is.
No, tell me.
It's snitches get stitches. Okay, I have a police officer friend, Jeffrey, that he says they go and investigate, go to these murder scenes, and there'll be people standing around, and they'll ask him what happened, and he says the same thing. Nobody has seen anything.
Nobody's seen anything. That, and I agree 100%. So imagine a prosecutor trying to prosecute that case. Right.
Yes, that's more difficult, but why is it dramatically dropped when she's coming to office?
Again, for the record, I am not here to defend Kim Gardner. I do not work in that office.
Yeah, granted.
And I am not going to do that. I like to talk from real data. You guys have brought some to my attention that I wasn't aware of. 7%. Now, what that makes me want to do as a leader, I'm going to go have a conversation with Kim Gardner and find out why that number is the number that's projected and put out there. And is that number right? I'm going to tell you, I don't believe everything I read in the Post.
But what about the cases that Amy brought up, though?
Right. And you know, she was promised more, you know, diversion screenings. And she said, I'm going to increase this. I believe she said tenfold, and they got cut by a third. So, you know, you're looking at these numbers, and it matters. It matters because many people are so passionate about this city. And not only do they want to save the lives, but this city gets so much bad press. So you have a circuit attorney that we have the numbers for that show she is incompetent in her position. And I would even argue doing harm. That's my personal opinion, doing harm in her position. And goes to national media. Notice she didn't even go to any local media because local media knows who she is. Local media has the statistics. She goes to national media to break the story, to invoke the Ku Klux Klan Act against the city of St. Louis. This hurts the city. There are real ramifications of these types of allegations, and when they feel completely fraudulent because of Kim Gardner's history, that gets people upset.
And I never thought I would ever hear in my lifetime a circuit attorney whose job is to prosecute people and put them in jail bragging about the number of people she's not putting in jail. And you have a city where the crime and murder rate is out of control, and she's bragging about the people she's not putting in jail. Are you kidding me?
And I read two articles recently, both in Vox, and one was talking about the number of specifically young black kids dying in St. Louis and how horrible this is. And it is. And they talked about how the community feels like the police don't care about the loss of black lives, so they're not trying to solve the problem. And then Vox gives conviction rates, like there's no conviction for any of these murders. No mention, right, of Kim Gardner, circuit attorney, or her policies, or the people who are getting off scot-free, like the Ballpark Village guy, or the guy who confessed to killing, I think it was Xavier. But you have that, no mention of that. And then in another Vox article, you have Kim Gardner and the Ku Klux Klan Act and how St. Louis is so racist. These two articles, completely separate, no mention one of the other, even though they're the same issue.
I kind of want to go back to, I yelled that like Trump, but I want to go back and flesh that out because you're right, Jeffrey. There's no doubt that there's a part of our community, locally and nationally, who's like, black prosecutor, let's get him. No doubt. But that doesn't mean, like Amy said, that the black prosecutor, wherever they are, aren't doing things wrong.
Yeah. And black female, because she probably faces more as a black female.
And with Trump, there's no argument that he is under more scrutiny, I think, than other presidents have been. Just look at the 93 to 95% negative coverage of him. Also doesn't mean he's not pulling shenanigans. It just means that we're going to see him now.
Look, I think it's a good thing that we had diversity in these circuit attorney's offices around the country and to have justice reform. I'm all for that. But what we've seen in San Francisco, when you start decriminalizing criminal activities, you have more of it. And you start having the situation you have in San Francisco where people are camping out in the streets, urinating, defecating on the streets because there's no consequences of it. There's a crazy law in San Francisco that if you steal under $950, you just get a citation. They won't arrest you. That's same type of decriminalization of crime is happening here in St. Louis, St. Louis County, other parts of the country, and we look to San Francisco, and it scares me to death.
And New York, look to New York, how they're softening on crime,
exactly.
And it's going downhill.
Something Amy mentioned that's very important. You had mentioned about how people feel basically, you know, that the police doesn't care because you know young black boys, you know, are dying on our streets. Here's what's even sadder. So you have four or five guys shot. Three of them are killed. The two that live won't say a word about who did it. That's what's tragic. And when you live in that environment, mm-hmm. it does affect your mental state.
Well,
and it does make you feel almost like hopeless. Because for the
for
love
sure.
of God, I don't understand why someone who was shot and survived wouldn't say Glover did it.
And it comes down to the bigger picture, Jeffrey. There's no government program for that. There's no something you can step in and solve it. That's something that black people are going to have to come among ourselves yeah. and say enough is enough. And no government program is going to help us yeah. help us retain some our values.
But we have to break this social engineering that has occurred in the African-American community where the culture says that you don't snitch, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to be willing to say who did what, because what happens when we don't say Chris Arps did it, he goes to kill five or six other people. And we're not understanding that for some reason in our community. And
because
and,
you can't
and
because
then
you
we
can't
blame
say
the police.
Because you can't
you know?
Because the thing is, you can't say that publicly to say, hey, black folks, we need to get our stuff together. Because if you do, you selling out black people publicly and you're Uncle Tom. That's why this stuff never changes, because we can't talk about it publicly because we're scared of what other people are going
to
say and saying we're selling out the community.
But we need to be deprogrammed, because we've been socially engineered for decades to believe in something to believe in the boogeyman, if you will.
Yeah.
Okay, because people, if somebody in my neighborhood saw who killed their mother, I guarantee you they would say, Pookie killed my mom. But if they saw who killed your mother, they're not willing to say.
And it's a trust, police trust issue too.
And it's not just the police trust. It's the real issue is Pookie and Ray Ray just might come and kill you before you get a chance to testify. That's
yeah,
real. And
that's
if they
happened.
Don't feel safe as a witness, then we're where we are today.
I think what we've learned is do not trust Pookie Ray Ray or Glover. Those three are bad news. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Here in studio, we have Jason Chinook, who is the CEO of Ducati North America and a guitarist. We're going to go to dinner. We have so much. Man, we are...
I'm there. Let's
simpatico.
Do it.
So how did you get the gig? I mean, what a great job.
Well, it's funny. The music piece that we were mentioning about in the whole guitar bit, I actually was a musician for a long time, actually an aspiring musician. And I played in St. Louis quite a few times. I was based out of Colorado, and we would always use Chicago as our kicking off point of tours. I did that for about 7 years. And then one day I woke up and I realized that as much as I loved being a musician and playing music, probably wasn't going to make a living doing that. It just came to that conclusion. So I decided to take what was a passion and what I was had, let's say, as a career drive, and change that into my hobby, and then take the thing that was my hobby and try to make
cool.
a career go at it.
Yeah,
and
it's very cool.
I was young enough where I was able to kind of pivot, you know,
yeah.
and make that change without having too big of an impact, because I had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Which is great about being young.
Yeah.
And I made that change, and I just went to my local motorcycle dealership in Colorado, and I said, hey, I'm a motorcyclist. I've been buying parts and working on my bikes for years, and I want to get in the motorcycling business. How do I do it? And the owner at the time said, you know, my parts guy's leaving to go in the Navy. Are you interested in being a parts manager? I said, sure.
And now you're
it.
The CEO.
Yeah. So that's how I got in the business.
That's as crazy as my story. I was an attorney, and I was advertising on radio. And I hated being an attorney, and I literally walked into a meeting that they were having 20 years ago to put this station on the air, and someone came out and offered me a job. And 20 years later, here I am.
Awesome.
Very similar.
Yeah. I'm here basically same thing 20 years later. It was
so
like
cool.
2000, I had that moment.
So here's what I know about Ducati. I think Ducati is by far the sexiest brand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'm pretty accurate assessing myself when it comes to... Oh, I'm this good at this and this good at that. I'm a competent motorcycle rider, but I'm not very accomplished. And so when I rode the Ducatis, the Monsters, and I never rode any of the super bikes, I felt like, okay, you're out of your league. Like we're just talking about, I feel out of my league playing a Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
But you're making the point very well that average riders shouldn't be afraid of a superior machine. Kind of doesn't make much sense when you really think about it.
In fact, this is the beauty of technology. I mean, it's that it's taken what would be perceived to be something out of reach for a lot of people, and it's made it accessible. I mean, they've done it with automotive for years, where you see these people driving supercars that, let's say, maybe don't really have the skill set to scratch the surface of what the car can do, but they're having fun. We've, through a lot of the development we've done in racing on the world stage with MotoGP and World Superbike, a lot of the stuff that we've learned there, it's not always just about power and how fast you can go. It's about control. Because there's that saying, power without control, and I mean, it's nothing. There's no point. If you've got all that power and you can't get it down to the ground in a safe and manageable way, then it's pointless. So we've taken a lot of the technology that we've learned through things like traction control, the ride-by-wire, the fuel mapping, I mean, slide control, wheelie control, etc., all of these things, and we've put them into our top-end products. So when somebody, let's say, that comes from a motorcycle, which is maybe not at the same level of performance, they can ease their way in. And it allows somebody that's, let's say, an average rider to feel like a professional.
Yeah.
And to develop naturally with the bike as well. That's what's really cool. Because, I mean, I wasn't born with a super bike under my butt. You know, I was riding Kawasaki KZ 750s and a lot of Japanese standard bikes from the 70s is kind of how I cut my teeth in the world of street motorcycling. And to think that I can hop on the Panigale V4, which is 214 horsepower, and ride it on a highway in traffic without feeling like I'm breaking a sweat.
Yeah.
That's an accomplishment. And I'm not an accomplished rider. I'm a good rider, but not at that level.
Yeah, and a lot of people, if you're a motorcyclist at all, so you subscribe to some of the magazines or something, if you said, Triumph, here's what I think, BMW, here's what I think, Honda, Suzuki, Yamaha, Ducati, I bet you, unless you're really into it like I am, you don't realize that Ducati has scramblers. Ducati has the Diavel, which I think may be the ultimate motorcycle because it's like a super crazy Batman badass cruiser.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, this is something that we as a brand, I don't know, 15 years ago, we made this decision where while we're known for superbikes, and let's say that's our halo, our core, we love what we do. And it's like you go to a good restaurant, you know that you want to tell everybody about it, but you have to make it accessible as well. And so they get a little bit bigger. Maybe you have to wait for your table. Fine. But at least you know that you share that. We feel that way about the brand. And so we know that the first way for us to do that is through product. And so we've taken the soul and the DNA that's in what we've put into the world of superbikes and MotoGP, and we've made it accessible throughout an entire product range. As you said, the Scrambler, which is incredibly accessible. I mean, under $10,000 and like around 75 horsepower, this is a fun bike to ride. In fact, when you get on that bike, it's just about fun. Mm. You don't even think about how much power it has or how fast am I going into the corner. I have a Scrambler in it. I almost put on a different hat when I ride that bike because I returned to kind of this simple way of what brought me into motorcycling. And then I hop on a Diavel and I grit my teeth. My elbows go out a little bit and I'm scanning the road. And it's a completely different mindset. And this is the beauty. It's like guitars.
Just like guitars.
You pick up a different guitar and it brings something out of you.
Yeah.
Motorcycles are the same way. And the good thing, and we were talking about that technology earlier, there's a lot of motorcycles that have companies that have embraced technology. The one thing I can say with confidence that's very distinctive about Ducati is we haven't engineered out the feel and the soul.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes when you put so much tech into something, it just becomes a digital experience. And it's still very, very analog. You still have to have that emotional, visceral, irrational connection with this inanimate object, this machine, in order to feel like you're moving the soul.
Yeah, I think we're so similar. I think that playing music, I'm a drummer mostly, playing music and riding a motorcycle are the ultimate, and other people fly fish or do yoga, but for me, the ultimate zen, because you have to be engaged or it's going to go sideways, but you do find yourself just almost losing track of yourself. Like, I don't even like riding bikes with other people. That's me time. I like going out by myself. I can stop when I want. If I want to go 45 around the turn instead of 90, I can do that. That's how I'd like to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, riding with other people, you know, I get invited and I have to sometimes for my position to do these group rides. It's the most stressful thing I do. Hands down, I'll deal with all of the other stuff all day long, but those group rides, it's because I ride for that moment to myself. Because when you're on the bike, I don't ride with an intercom. I don't want to hear anything from anyone else. I want to be in that moment where your mind almost goes blank and it clears everything out of what's happening in the world for that minute and that moment that you're on the motorcycle and it's just you, the road, and it takes that total concentration. And then when you get off, you're relaxed. So I try to actually commute as much as possible. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Mm-hmm. So I try to commute as much as possible. Plus, we get a split lane, so we get
that. Yeah, we get that. I see people doing it here, and it makes my butt clench.
Yeah, ultimately, it's not the issue of is it safe. It's what other people, the rest of the drivers, and understanding and used to people splitting lanes. You're right. I mean, I would not do it outside of a place that's used to it.
Yeah.
But point is that I use that for that moment on my way to work. And I come into work and I'm in a good mood always, always. The days that I get in the car and I end up taking 4 or 5 phone calls on the way in, it's not as doesn't start off that
way.
Yeah,
I think of, God rest his soul, Neil Peart, who just passed away, who would always, he never took the bus. He always got on the bike and rode to wherever he was going to go for the next concert. So what do people need to know, should know, in St. Louis about Ducati?
We're hosting an event tonight. It's called Ready for Red. And what this is an opportunity for us to kick off the 2020 season. And we recognized a couple years ago that the motorcycle shows that used to go across the country, they have slowly dwindled down in terms of what markets they hit. And so there used to be 11 and then 9 and 7. So we took a look at this and said, instead of limiting where we can take our brand and we give people an opportunity to see these bikes by where these shows go, honestly, screw the shows. We're going to bring our brand and the product to the market. And so tonight we're hosting an event at Moto Europa with the idea of giving the first view, the preview of the 2020 product lineup, which includes the new Street Fighter, which is a V4 powered naked motorcycle, which is an incredible bike, and a handful of other bikes. But it's more than just the bikes that we're going to show. It's also sharing with the community, the motorcycling community, what we've got cooking for the year. We're going to leak a little bit about what's happened in the world of racing in Moto America in the Superbike stage. We've got a couple other things that we're doing for U.S. racing activities. What sort of training that we're doing with the Ducati Riding Experiences, both an enduro course and a track one, and a bunch of other things. So there's really the idea is it's about kicking off the season and what's happening in the world of Ducati and bringing it to our partner here Very in St. Cool. Louis.
And so that, for those of you who don't know, Moto Europa is in Midtown, and it's connected to the Triumph Grill. So go by, see this, go over to Triumph Grill, have something to eat. Really nice to meet you. Good luck. Enjoy St. Louis.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it being here.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.